Okay, begin this week, Parshas Shlach. What I'd like to really do is share really just a beautiful and brilliant insight from the Ramban. This discussion, this week's Parsha, of course, is about the spies, the 12 spies that were sent to Eretz Yisrael to spy out the land. And working through the text, as we'll read through the Psukim, I just want to share something that the Ramban notes, again, that really just sheds so much light, not just on the story, but in the way that we sometimes interact in our own daily lives as well. Some of the issues in this parsha, let's start right away. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Limor. Let's jump right in. Hashem says to Moshe, speaking, Shlach lecha anashim v'yasuru es eretz Kenan. Send out for yourself men, and they will spy out the land of Kenan. Asherinu sein l'bnei Yisrael, that I plan on giving now to Bnei Yisrael. Ish echad l'mateh avosav. One person from each tribe, kol nasi bahem. Each one should be a nasi. That is the entirety of the command. The next pasuk already says, Vayishlach osam Moshe. Moshe sent them. So in this one pasuk, we have the command. Let's work through the salient points of the command. Number one, who is the speaker? Who's the one who tells them to send the spies based on this pasuk? That's clearly Hashem. The pasuk began, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe and he told them, Shlach lecha anashim. So salient point number one is, whose idea was this? It was Hashem's idea, came from him. Their goal was, V'yasuru es eretz Kanan, they shall spy out the land of Kanan, that's about to be given. Contextually speaking, where are we right now? If you remember last week, we learned about the Jews' first journey into the desert after they left Har Sinai. They were at Har Sinai for about a year's time, and then they journeyed forth. And Rashi there already commented, Hashem, so to speak, traveled 3 days in 1 day's time. He was quick. He was in a rush to get them to the land of Israel, which is where they were headed. So we're on our way. We spent the year at Midbar Sinai learning Torah from Moshe. We built the Mishkan. We're ready to go now and journey into the land of Israel. And along the way, we have this episode of the sending of the spies based on our pasuk from Hashem. Now, the other salient point in this pasukim, there are two others, are how many spies should be sent? Now, again, if I were to have asked you that question and I said, well, how many spies should you send? What would you say is the magic number of spies that should be sent on such a reconnaissance mission? The number to that should be two. We find throughout Tanakh various instances of spies being sent to check out a land, and it's always the number two, which makes sense. You don't want to be too conspicuous. You want to be able to get in and get out and not really be noticed. Get done what you need to get done. Two people is the right number. And so what jumps out at us in this pasuk is Hashem says to Moshe to send spies, and how many does he send? Ish echad, the matea vosav, one from each tribe, 12 people. That's quite an entourage. A spy group of 12? You're not going to sneak in unnoticed. That's it's a tour group already. They're going to have their own bus and a guy with a flag gathering everybody. You know, we're going over here. We're stopping off for lunch at this falafel stand. 12 people is significant. Why would they send 12? And number three, what jumps out in this pasuk is, what quality would you have looked for in a spy if you were going to send a mission? The person who you're going to spend, what are the qualities you're looking for? So he would say that whatever the quality of a spy is, I don't know, you want the guy to be a little bit shady kind of character, maybe, depending if you want him to blend into the street, you want him to blend into the white collar aspect of the land, whatever qualities of, but it's what you need of a spy. What quality does Hashem ask of Moshe that they should send? They should send kol nasi bahem. They should, princes? Leaders of the tribe? Who in their right mind would think that the guy who became a leader, that should be the one that you send as a spy? So it's very odd as we begin this story that it comes from Hashem, it is 12 of them, and that the type of character that's chosen should be specifically a leader. It just doesn't seem to fit what we would have thought a spy would be. The Torah then continues, Vayishlach, we'll read through this quickly because there's a lot to get through. Vayishlach osam Moshe mimidbar Paran al pi Hashem. So they were sent out and they were all leaders. Kulam anashim, Rashi b'nei Yisrael. And then the Torah gives us their names from each tribe, which is not related for our purposes today. We'll skip through all of those psukim in which we get the names of each one of the members. And Moshe sends them, and then Moshe asks them a series of questions. Uri'isem ha'aretz mahi. Pasuk Yudches, Moshe says, go check out the land and see what it is. Yes, ha'am ha'yoshev alah. Check out the nations that dwell on this land. Hechezaku, are the nations strong? Harafeh, are they weak? Hame'atuim rav, are they strong or are they numerous or are they many? Give us a report of the land and give us a report of the nations. And whether the aretz is hatoyvahi imra'ah, if the nation, if the land is good or not, are the cities open? Are they fortified? Are they surrounded by walls? Is the soil rich or poor? Are there wooded areas? And he says, v'his chazaktem, be strong, ulekachtem mi pri ha'aretz, and bring back from the fruits of the land. And here we have salient point number four. Most of Moshe's questions make a lot of sense for a spy mission. What's the land like? What are the people like? Are the cities fortified? Are they strong? Are they numerous? That's all like logical things you'd want to find out. What do we need to see the fruits for? Why does Moshe ask that they should bring back from the fruit? Vayalu vayasur asara. So they go. And they come back, min midbar tzin ad rechov levo chamos, and they check it out. And the Torah then describes where they went. Let's address some of these points right here, and then we'll get to the next point that I really want to focus on. The issue, one of the major issues with reading this story is how it contrasts with the story when this is repeated in Sefer Devarim. 40 years fast forward. This report, of course, is going to net a disaster this entire episode. The spies, we know, of course, are going to come back. We're going to have a negative report. The people are going to cry. And Hashem is going to decree 40 years of exile, basically wandering through the desert until the next generation will enter into the land. When that next generation is about to enter into the land, 40 years later, Moshe, in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, again, this is fast-forwarding 40 years, recounts this story. And he tells the people, remember what happened when the last time we were about to enter into the land. But there he tells the story with some very significant differences. One of the biggest differences is that when he tells the story 40 years later, he says, Vatikrevun Eli Kulchem. You came to me and said, we want to send spies. Vayitov hadavar be'enov. And it was good in my eyes. So that if you only read the second story as it's repeated 40 years later, Moshe says, it was your idea, and I liked it. But in our parsha, what we just read, whose idea was this? Where does this initiate from? Pasuk is very clear. Vayidaber Hashem. Hashem spoke to Moshe and said, send the spies. So it's very complicated just how you read the story in our presentation, in Parsha Shlach. It sounds the first story we get is Hashem says to Moshe, go send the spies. But when Moshe tells the story 40 years later, he says, you, the people, came to me and said, let's send spies. And this is one of the complications of working out this story. The Ramban understands it as follows, that the two stories are, of course, one seamless whole, and each presentation is picking up on different aspects. And the Ramban understands it as follows. The initial idea came from the people. The people wanted spies. Why did they want spies? They wanted spies to, in a military aspect, in the same way that whenever you go to conquer a nation, ein som chen al anes, we don't rely on miracles, you got to prepare. When you prepare for a military operation, you got to go check it out. Who are our enemies? Which roads are the best to take? Which is the city that we should conquer first? Are the cities fortified that we're going to need to build ramps? Or are they open cities? We got to be prepared. What are we going to fight? And since they were on their way in, the people said, Moshe, we'd like to have spies, that we have a reconnaissance mission so we know what it is to do in a military perspective, that we're ready to go. So that from the masses of the people, they wanted this. And Moshe says, and it was a good idea in my eyes. I thought it was appropriate. At the end of the day, Hashem is going to give us this land, but we don't, ain't som chen al anes, the Ramban says. We should be normal. And this is a normal thing to do. But what our Parsha opens up with are two additions, one that Moshe made to their request, and one that Hashem made to their request. Moshe adds to their request, he says, most of the things that he says are logical. Check out the roads, check out the cities, are they fortified, what are the numbers of the people that are there? But then Moshe says, bring back fruit. Why did Moshe say bring back fruit? What is that? Why is that relevant to a military conquest to see what the apples look like, or the pomegranates, or the grapes? So to that, the Ramban says, Moshe understood, listen, the people here, they're going in. They're a year removed from Mitzrayim. This is their first journey into the desert, and now we're getting ready for war. It's frightening. They should at least be excited about where they're going. They don't have Google Maps. They can't check out pictures from the brochure of what the land of Israel looks like. All they have is what we've been telling them. Hashem said it's a land flowing with milk and honey. It's a beautiful place. But they've never seen it. They haven't had a chance to put their eyes. They all grew up in Mitzrayim, these people. So Moshe says to the spies, I like the idea. The people come and say, let's send a military mission. Moshe says, Gishmak, no problem at all. But you know something? Bring back some of the fruit. What does that have to do with anything? I want when the people see the nature of this fruit, they're going to be excited about this mission. They're going to be ready to go to war. They are going to know that Hashem is gifting them the best piece of land in the world, and they are going to be ready to jump at it. So he adds to the mission, he adds things, information about the land that will get them excited because they don't have anything to actually see without their brochures. But when they see the fruits coming back, they'll be like, oh, this is the land that we're going to be excited to go to. Our Parsha opens with Hashem speaking. So the Ramban says it's true. Hashem said something, but it wasn't his idea. The people initiated this idea, but it is true that Hashem then said to Moshe, this is how I want it to go. And he adds the two salient points that we highlighted when we read the Pasuk, both of which don't necessarily make sense. Number one, how many spies would we have sent had this been only a military mission? We would have sent two. What does our Parsha begin with? Hashem speaks to Moshe and says, send 12. 12. Why would you send a reconnaissance mission with 12 people? So the Ramban explains, Hashem said, listen, the people want this. They want to be normal. They don't want to rely on miracles. No problem. That's fine. But this can't be a representation of only two of the 12 tribes because Hashem knows the potential for disaster, which of course is what happens. Can you imagine what would have happened if only two spies went and those two would have turned sour and came back with a negative report and the people would have cried and then they would have been decreed 40 years in the desert? They would have looked at those two people and those two tribes that they represented and said, you messed us up. You're the cause of our disaster. And those two tribes would have always been looked at with disdain from the rest of the nation. So Hashem says, listen, you don't need this mission. I'm telling you it's a good land. You want to send a reconnaissance mission? That's fine. That's fair. That's logical. But you can't send only two. You have to have a representative from every single tribe because Hashem says, I know what the potential where this can go. And therefore, everybody has to have equal representation in this mission. And then he adds a second point. What kind of spies? Not your average run-of-the-mill qualifications for spies. We're going to send a nasi. We're going to send the prince. We're going to send the leaders. Because for the same reason, if this is going to flop, if this is going to turn sour, it has to be that it wasn't just some Joe from the tribe who messed this up. It has to be representation. It has to be people who hopefully can rise above all of the complications of this mission and come back with a positive report. Why the spies bring back a negative report is a whole separate discussion as to what was their ulterior motive. But leaving that aside, it has to be people who could rise above that. They have to be leaders. It has to be people who we can hope will come back with a positive report and lead the people in a correct way. And therefore, our parsha begins with Hashem speaking. Not the idea was initiated, as Moshe later tells us, from the people, but they only wanted a military mission. Our parsha then opens with two unique aspects. One, that Hashem adds of, it has to be 12, and it has to be leaders. And Moshe adds, don't just check out the military aspects. I want you to bring back fruit. I want when everyone comes home, it creates a great fervor and a great excitement for this particular mission. Let's now take a look at when they come back. When they come back, they are going to report in two different stages. And here's where the Ramban is going to highlight what they say at each stage. So let's take a look at their actual words when they come back. Scrolling down a little bit later, the Torah describes that they went to the various places, and now they have returned. Pasuk says here in Pasuk Chaf Hey, after 20 Vayashuvu mitor haaretz miketz arba imyam, 40 days, they check out the land and they return. Pasuk Chaf Vav Vayelchu Vayavou El Moshe V'El Aharon V'El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. Who do they return to? Who do they speak to, so to speak? Who do they show up in front of? The Pasuk says very clearly, to Moshe and to Aharon, the El Kol Adat B'nei Yisrael, and to the entirety of the Jewish people. They come to Midbar Paran, and they report, Osam Davar V'El Kol Ha'edah. They report to them, to Moshe and to Aharon, and to the entirety of the community, and they show them the fruit. Now, the fruit, as you know from all the famous pictures, and we don't actually have, by the way, a picture of the spies. Camera hadn't yet been developed. We have all these drawings of what it looked like, these massive grapes and pomegranates that they were bringing back. And let's take a look now at what they say in front of everybody. Vayisaprulo. And this is what they told him. Vayomru, Banu el aretz asher shalachtanu. They say to Moshe, we went to the land that you sent us. Vigam zavat chalav udevashi. And indeed, it is a land that flows with milk and honey. Vizet pirion. Take a look at the fruit. It's enormous. It's massive. Efes, however, ki oz ha'am hayoshev ba'aretz. The people who inhabit the country are powerful and the cities are fortified. V'gam yilidei ha'anak ra'inu sham. And we saw the Anakites, the children of the giants were there. And they say, Amalek dwells in the south, and the Chiti, and the Yavusi, and the Mori in the Har. Haknani yoshev alayom v'alaha yardein. End of their quote. When you break down this quote, did they say anything false? Did they say anything untrue? Answer is no, they did not. Take a look at the, let's go through the words again. They said, we went to the land, it flows with milk and honey, and here are its fruit. Everything is accurate. The people who inhabit the country are powerful. True. The cities are fortified and large. True. We saw the giants there. True. Amalek is in the Negev. True. The Chiti, the Yavusi, the Amori are in the hill country. True. The Canaanim are in the sea along with the Jordan. True. They do not say anything false. Nor do they say, we can't take it. They didn't say any of that. All they said is, we found a land flowing with milk and honey, and there are a lot of strong people there. That's what they say. Now, we're going to get back to this, but the very next pasuk says, Vayahas Kalev Esa'am El Moshe. Kalev silenced the people to Moshe. Kalev and Yoshua, the two spies who come back with a positive report, silence the people. Why do they need to silence the people? Clearly, a tumult breaks out from their words, and Kalev has to silence everyone. What did they say that created that tumult? So the Ramban explains, they said one word which created that tumult, and that's the word Ephes. However, but, so that they said, the land flows with milk and honey, look at its fruits, but there are a lot of strong nations that live there. You know, I'm sure you've all had this experience, I'm sure, where you get a compliment from back in the school days, maybe a teacher or a colleague or a parent who says something like, you know, your presentation was really nice, but, and as soon as they say that, but, you know, whatever they said before the but is irrelevant, and you know all they want to do is give you the criticism coming after the but. Oh, you look so nice, but, well, you know, it's irrelevant. You didn't say anything nice to me. It doesn't work that way. As soon as you say that word but, then everything before that was, yeah, you're just buttering me up, and now you really want to get to the real criticism that you want to say. Says that one word, Ephes, they said, the spies come back, and they say, it is indeed a land flowing with milk and honey, but the people are powerful, and they're fortified, and the giants are there, and Amalek, and the Chiti, and the Amori, and the Yavusi, and the Knani. And the people understood from that word, but, why did they say the word, but? They didn't just say, and, they said, but. It's that when they said that word, but, they were implying, they didn't want to say it explicitly because they're speaking in front of Moshe and Aaron. They said, it's a nice land, but we can't have it. They didn't say those words. They did not say those words, but the people understood from their message that they were implying, we will never be able to conquer all of these fortified, strong nations that live there. And therefore, they begin to murmur. All the people heard that language of but, and you could hear the murmuring. And that's why you get Pasuk Lamed, Vayahas Kolev Esa'am El Moshe, like we read. Kolev has to silence everybody. Vayomer, Alo Na'alev Yerashna Osa. We can go up. We can gain possession. Ki Yachol Nuchal. We can do it. He's clearly responding to the doubt that has been sown, the seeds of doubt into the people. And Kalev says, we can do it. And now, stage two, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, V'ha'anashim asher alu imo amru, the people who went up with Kalev said, Lo nuchal la'alos el ha'am ki chazaku mimenu. Now for the first time they say it explicitly, after Kalev tries to silence all the murmuring of the people, now they say explicitly, we can't go up. It's too strong for us. And then, stage three. So again, follow me, there are three stages here. Stage one is they say in front of Moshe, Aaron, and all the people, in an illusion they say, it's a nice land, but the people are really strong. The people clearly pick up on this because Kalev has to silence all of the murmuring to say, we can take it. And then they respond explicitly and say, no, we can't. Now at this point, have they said anything negative about the land? Answer is no. They said, the people who inhabit the land are too strong for us. That's all they said so far. And now we get to stage three of their words. In Pasuk Lamed Beis, Vayotziu Dibas Ha'aretz Asher Taru Osol B'nei Yisrael Lemor, they then spread an evil report about the land that they spied out to the Jewish people, saying, Ha'aretz Asher Avarnu Ba, the source of the land that we passed through to test out, to spy out, Eretz Ocheles Yoshveha. It's a land that devours its inhabitants. V'chol Ha'am Asher Re'inu B'socha and Shemidos. And everyone who lives there are giants. We saw the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in their eyes. And then the people cry. Vatisa kol ha'edo v'ayitunu es kolom. The people cry. V'ayivku ha'am balayla ha'hu. They cry that night. Now, a couple of important points. Number one, this third stage of their words, now we find for the first time the Torah says the words, they brought out an evil report about the land. Because they didn't at first. At first they said, the land is good, look at its fruit, but everybody's strong. Then Kalev says, we can do it. Then they say, no, we can't. The people are too strong. They're still only talking about the people. Then it says, they brought out an evil report about the land, saying, the land devours its inhabitants. It's not a place we can live in. Sages say they saw funerals taking place all over the place. The land devours its inhabitants. Everybody's a giant, and we were like grasshoppers, and then the people cried that night. Says the Ramban, a brilliant comment, picking up on two points. Number one, who do they say this third section to? This last piece, where the Torah actually says they brought out an evil report about the land. That's the first time the Torah says it was an evil report about the land itself. Who do they say that to? Pasuk says, again, Vayotziu Dibasar Zerodra El Bnei Yisrael. Where's Moshe and Aaron? They originally began speaking in front of Moshe and Aaron. Where did they go? The Ramban says an amazing thing. The first two stages of the conversation were in front of everybody. And it was a debate. You had the spies saying this, but then Kalev saying, we can take it. And then the spies saying, we can't. And that was a debate about the strength of the nations that live there. And they debated it. And then everybody went home. And the people, the Ramban says, were They were not sure of themselves. They were in great doubt. Should we follow Moshe and Aaron? Should we follow and Kalev and Yoshua? Or what about these other 10 leaders who all said we can't do it? Hashem is slowly going to take us in. He did all these other miracles. But they said they're giants. And nobody was sure what to do. And then the third stage happens, and it's only in front of Bnei Yisrael. The Ramban says, then the spies went around the different camps, and they went into the people's tents, and they went into their homes, and that's where they spread the evil report about the land and said it devours its inhabitants. But they only said that in front of the people. They didn't have the audacity to say that in front of Moshe and Aaron. They went into their tents at night, and that's where they spread this evil report about the land. In front of Moshe and Aaron, they only said the people are strong. Alone, not in front of Moshe and Aaron, then they start speaking about the land, and they speak this Dibor Ra'ah. And now without anyone to counter it, without Moshe present, and they're tense at night, without Moshe present, without Aharon present, without Kalev, without Yoshua, that spreads. And that's why the Pasuk says, when the people hear this, Vatisa kol edo vayinu, they begin to cry, and the Torah says, when did they cry? At night. Why at night? The spies gave the report, and I know they came back during the day, they gathered everybody. But they didn't cry then, they cried later that night when the spies went out to the camp and started spreading the libel within the camps at home. Did you hear? Did you hear? The land is terrible. Not in their public report in front of Moshe and Aharon and Kalev and Yehoshua. In the private meetings after the meetings, they began to spread without anyone to defend it. They started spreading the evil reports. And that's when it spreads, and that's when the people believe, and that's when they cry at night. At night they cry. And then they come to Moshe and Aaron with their complaint, and they say, if only we would have died in the land of Egypt, this is terrible, we're all going to die. And then everything falls apart, in which Hashem has to basically say, this generation is not going in. In fact, he says, I'd rather just destroy this whole generation. And Moshe says, no, what are they going to say in Mitzrayim? If you destroy them, it's going to be terrible. So Moshe says, fine, but they're not going in. The next generation, they're going to wait 40 years until they all die out. But it's the progression of their speeches in which first they just allude to a problem with the word, but they're really strong. The people begin to pick up on that, and Kalev tries to stop it and say, we can. And then they overtly say, they're too strong, but that's all they say. Then everyone goes home, and then they say the land is bad. Then they say it eats its inhabitants. It devours those who live there. We'll never be able to take it. And then the people believe that, and they cry in their tents at night. And this is the famous pasuk that Chazal say, at night, that night they cried, but they had nothing to cry about. Hashem is going to give us and bring us to this beautiful land. But this was the night of Tisha B'Av, the night of the ninth day of the month of Av. And this night of tears became, for all of Jewish history, a terrible night of tears. The day that both of the Batei HaMikdash were destroyed on. The night that until today we still sit on the floor and mourn and cry over its destruction. Spanish Inquisition in 1492 was right around Tisha B'Av. The First World War begins right around Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av has been a terrible day for the Jewish people in throughout history. And it's from this Vayivku Ha'om Balayla Ha'hu. And it was that night they cried. But it was at night, as Rabban says, terrible report, the slanderous report is given alone in the tents at night. Those are the most destructive types of reports. Those given publicly in front of those who can defend and those who can argue have a different tenor than the ones that are given in the privacy of a home where you can say whatever you want and no one's there to argue against you. Tremendous lessons, as Rabban points out, from the way the Torah hints at how this event unfolded and the different stages of the spies' reports in terms of what it teaches us about how we take in information, where we take in information, and how the evil reports spread. Why, again, the spies were invested in giving an evil report, again, a very different discussion. This is how the Ramban understands the nature of how they reported it, with great lessons for us in all of our lives. That is some thoughts on Parsha Shlach and the spies. Always a great pleasure learning. Again, thank you for learning a little bit earlier than usual. And Mirtz Hashem will pick up again next week. Wishing you all a wonderful day.